I'm Farai Chidea, and this is News and Notes. Hill Harper has built a huge fan base in his role as Dr. Sheldon Hawks in the CBS show CSI New York. But he's also made time to write books and mentor young adults. His 2006 book, Letters to a Young Brother, is a collection of letters by prominent African Americans to young black men. Harper now has a similar book aimed at young black women. It's called Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny. Actress Gabrielle Union wrote the foreword to Harper's latest book, and both of them filled us in on what they're doing to make sure it reaches its audiences. Hi, folks.
Hi.
So, you know, this book is one, Hill, where you really start out by talking about a woman who really didn't even speak her mind, but who came to one of your book readings. Tell me that story.
When I wrote my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny, it felt very organic because I was writing to young men. I had been gifted books when I was young that really served as mentorship on paper for me. They helped me navigate the journey from boyhood to manhood. My goal was to write a book that could equally inspire today's young men, and that's what I was thinking about. But when I was on my book tour and young women would come to the book signings and say, well, what about us? You talk about how these young men are the newest perfect model and how you're trying to build up their self-esteem. How come I never hear that from young men? How come I never hear that from men about me? And then you start to dig underneath the surface and you start to realize that two-thirds of our young women are being raised by single mothers who are doing the best they can. But oftentimes, the love and affection that they get from males, and particularly in terms of platonic love and affection, is missing. And then it's no wonder why a lot of our young women go in search of male affection and love, and sometimes with the wrong people in the wrong way in the wrong place at the wrong time.
Gabrielle, let's talk a little bit about your role. You wrote the foreword to the book, and you have done so many things. You've been in action movies like Bad Boys 2. You've been Alice Cramden in The Honeymooners. You've been on Ugly Betty. And I'm sure people in our culture think of you as kind of untouchably beautiful and elegant, which is fabulous. But, you know, you have a lot more complicated of a story. What kind of a teenager were you in terms of relating to your parents about what you should be in life?
I was according to them, if you ask them, they'd say I was a perfect child. I was a model child because I did everything that was asked of me. I got great grades. I was a great athlete. I was a student leader. But what was going on inside and what I was dealing with individually and as a group of girls, as a part of a large group of girls, it was absolute turmoil. Emotionally, physically, spiritually, we were sort of forced to deal with very adult issues and situations as a collective. And or oftentimes we didn't even turn to each other. We would internalize everything. And so I was going through major low self-esteem. I was the black girl in an all-white school, in an all-white community, never feeling good enough, but always being encouraged by my parents to be bigger, badder, better. And perfect is the standard. You starting to like guys. And, you know, in my own town, you know, with me being the black girl, the white guys weren't really checking for me that way. My hair isn't straight enough. My nose isn't pointy enough. My lips are too big. My boobs aren't big enough. Like, and you start going through all of that. I've realized as I've gotten older, a lot of the same issues I was dealing with at 15, I'm dealing with at 35.
So when you think about the fact that you, like so many of us, are still walking a path towards self-acceptance, what kind of hope can you actually give to teen girls? You know, can you say it's going to get easier?
You know, my niece is 15, and she's dealing with her skin. She's dealing with her hair. She's dealing with a growing acceptance of her nose. It's such a similar struggle, but at the same time, I can say I have gotten a little bit further along on that journey, and there is definitely light at the end of the tunnel. But we don't generally share these stories.
Hill, I want to talk a little bit more about your philosophical approach to this. You quote a ton of people, from religious leaders to authors to people in your family. What do you consider wisdom?
Wow. Well, wisdom, first and foremost, to me, has a lot to do with self-compassion. You can't start or even think about future-based ideas that are wisdom-oriented if you don't feel that you're worthy of a future. So I think that the key is to deal with self-esteem and self-worth first. Apply some self-compassion to that so that you start to love and accept aspects of yourself. And then we can start talking about wisdom. So wisdom is anything that hits home with you and seeps through the noise that may be blocking you, whether it's fear, like I call fear false evidence appearing real. That's what fear stands for, because most of the fears we have and most of the insecurities all of us have, they're false. They have been told to us by some type of untrue cultural reality that has nothing to do with the actual fact that most of us as human beings want something extremely fundamental, and that's to be loved and to love others. And that's it. It gets really simple if we can get through all the noise.
Let's talk a little bit about recovery from trauma. Gabrielle, you had to deal with sexual assault, and you've talked about this before, and in this book, you really do talk movingly about kind of how you had to accept something that was not your fault and then move forward. Tell us just a little bit about what you went through, but then how you move forward.
You know, growing up, like I said, my parents created this very idyllic childhood. Nothing bad is supposed to happen. We are the Joneses. We've caught up with the Joneses. We've got this great house. We live in this great neighborhood. You know, everyone is educated. Nothing bad is supposed to happen. And I go to work, and I am raped and beaten at work at my summer job. And this part of the shock of it all, aside from just the sexual assault, is that our perfect world, as I knew it, was shattered. Everything I put my trust and faith in was taken away, on top of my body being, you know, ravaged. And what came out of that was bad things happen to people every day. You're not the only one, you know, carrying this cross. There's a lot of people who deal with adversity on a daily basis, and much worse. What are you going to do about it? You can be a victim for the rest of your life because people will let you. They'll be like, well, you know, she was raped. That's why she didn't, you know, ever finish school. That's why she never became anything. She was raped. And they will allow this sisterhood of victim, you know, of victimhood to go on and on and on and on. And as a perfect excuse for why you never became anything. Or you can say, bad things happen to people every day. How am I going to choose to deal with this? And I chose to stay in school. I chose to make sure I wasn't, you know, I turned in my paper on Monday. And I remember during the rape kit thinking, oh, God, I got to recheck my bibliography because I have to turn this paper in on Monday. Like, failure is not an option. It doesn't matter what is going on. And I made that choice for myself. And when I made that choice, everyone around me was like, okay, we don't have a victim here. We immediately have a survivor, and we're going to put everything, every option in her path to create the best, happiest, healthiest survivor that we can have.
Hill, what about that same question of being resilient? I mean, bouncing back from any number of setbacks, whether they're ones that they inspired themselves, like maybe not studying in school and dropping out, or ones that that no one could have predicted and come out of the blue.
Well, the message that I try to reinforce and reinforce and reinforce is that this is a journey, and there are always going to be obstacles of different sizes, shapes, and they come at you from different ways. But there's always going to be something beautiful as well. And it's how you ultimately create and walk this path that's going to determine if you're going to be able to achieve the things that you know deep inside you can achieve. But part of the problem is a lot of the young women I talk to don't even allow themselves to dream because they've been disappointed so many times. And so it's almost like a restart of saying, first, you have permission to dream. So dream big. And then I say, okay, whatever you said you dreamed big on, I want you to double it. And then after you doubled it, you still haven't dreamed big enough. And then they start to get the message that they have been given permission to dream so big that anything is possible. And that's what it's about. It's about looking forward and ultimately not looking back. And I'm not talking about denying the past and trying to erase things, but it's also, again, looking at yourself from a place of self-compassion, self-forgiveness, and moving forward to something amazing.
On that note, Hill, Gabrielle, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Actor Hill Harper is author of the new book, Letters to a Young Sister, Define Your Destiny. He spoke with us from WFAE in Charlotte, North Carolina. He was joined by Gabrielle Union. She's in the new Eddie Murphy movie, Meet Dave, opening this Friday. And Gabrielle joined us from our NPR studios in Culver City, California. Want more? You can catch this entire interview with Hill Harper and Gabrielle Union on our blog at nprnewsandviews.org.